Good evening, everyone. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, and we're at the long tail trailing edge of the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is week number 53, and I've been told that that's actually 1 week longer than a year on this particular planet. And I accept that. I accept that whatever a year is, that's okay with me too. And we've concluded, somehow we've come to the conclusion, I was going to say after diligent reasoning, but I know that wasn't part of it, we are going to be doing the American Book of the Dead guidebook next. Now, the reason that we're doing that next is because I think we've caught a whiff of the concept of Bardo spaces. And even though we're reaching back into a particular type of antiquity, I think that when E.J. put together the guidebook, there was a strong flavor of that in his, let's just say, my feeling was that it was every day for him then. And I'm sure he can access that as we speak too. But so I was I don't think, last I heard that Simon had left for Southern South America. He'll be gone, George, as you know, for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And did you talk to him before he left?
I talked to him on Tuesday night. He was expecting to leave Wednesday morning. His flight was canceled owing to some kind of difficulty in South America. So he participated on Wednesday night, as you know, and then he left on that next Thursday morning.
Okay, good.
A week ago.
Yes, he left almost a week ago, and we spoke a couple of times during that weekend, and I think just before he spoke with you, he's a absolute night bird, because I was speaking to him at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock my time,
mm-hmm.
and so that's, you know, after midnight in Toronto. But he was very comfortable. He seems very comfortable till about 3 a.m. his time. And but anyway, so what happened was is that he became so energized by the idea of the ABD that he really saw it as a practicum for himself. And he's looked through every single ABD course on live stream at least once. So he participates in the class and he goes back and he reviews it if you go on live stream, it's in the archives, right? You just go through and you can see it. Is it still there? Are they all there?
Yes.
Wow. Unbelievable. And the reason was, his itinerary changed, but first he was going to go and visit some folks in, I think, New Mexico or somewhere in Arizona. And it was very magical for him what he was going to do. So he had, like, the real sense of that he was entering into a Bardo space. So what was important there for me, and we talked about this for a long time, was the sense that he's about to enter into a Bardo space.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that as voyagers we want to cultivate, because let's just say that that's like a beeper, a scanner of some sort,
mm-hmm.
and
it's an alert system, an alarm system, and it's an alert system.
Better word, it's an alert system, and if at some point that should always be working for you, and so because you're traveling down the road, let's say you're at the market or you go into town or something to do a task. And suddenly something catches your attention. What catches your attention is your sensing mechanism. Your sensing mechanism becomes alert, as Pat is telling us. There's an alert, and you go, oh, something's going on. Now, exactly what it is, that takes a different skill to discern it.
Yes.
But the what we're talking about now, and we'll see a little bit about this in the chamber we're going to look at tonight too, is to begin to become alert to this, you know, aware of it. And he was, and we went over a number of things, and as we talked about at the end of the ADD,
mm-hmm.
and in appendix, particularly B and C,
yeah.
you can see examples of it. And I've been threatening for 2 years now to go get those Bardo cards.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm probably going to have enough momentum by spring
mm-hmm.
to actually dive into the archives where they are. They're in the HEI storage unit somewhere.
Right.
And these are bright color photographs. Several of us that are here were around when EJ built Bardo Town. And this is a 4x16 foot creation that he used the models, like model train.
A scale model.
Scale model, like H scale, things like that.
H-O.
H-O, that's H-O what it scale. Is. Thank you, Marvette. H-O. And you know, there were mountains, and there was like the carousel, you know, the carnival area. There was the Grand Hotel, the Wharf Town, Wharf District. Here.
He handed the phone.
In regards to that, I recall EJ, I mean, he still does. He calls out sometimes, any time of day or night, all of a sudden, he'll say, oh, somebody's going through the university, and they're going through it backwards so they know what they're doing. And apparently, Bardo Town is a map of places to move through in the Bardo.
And how to move.
And how to move, yeah.
Now that you bring that up, it's an absolute map, okay? So what we're learning now is the first phase. When we go through the ABD, we're learning one sheen of it. It's like a patina
mm-hmm.
of how the Bardos operate. It's a particular form of language. The language, as we get more skilled at it, we're able to deepen that language and penetrate it a little bit. We'll have an interesting discussion in this particular chamber tonight, but nevertheless, we're starting to be on the verge of that. All right. I actually pulled out my set over the weekend of the cards. I don't have an official set, but I have the copies of it that you work with, and I'll demonstrate this all in the next few months when I pull them out. But anyway, so he built this Bardo Town, and then he proceeded to take, I don't know, I would say 1,000
gazillion
photographs of
yeah.
Bardo Town using pinhole camera
yes.
technology. That allows perspective to be created in a certain way. So this is what you get when you have an individual who has perfected skills in many areas. In his case, we're talking about photography. And then, interestingly enough, and you'd have to ask him, but he took those photographs, printed them out, and then he shot them again with another 35 millimeter camera, if I'm not mistaken, Marvette. And then I took those and had those printed out as color when I was doing all that color copying work.
And if you've spent any time in any of the God worlds, G-O-D-D, the game, you will know that those images are from those photographs. All of that is built from that universe.
So
it continues to exist in multiple interfaces.
So, I guess...
Orbs are built in the God engine, G-O-D-D. That's where they're built. And they're built from the creations that have been made for the purposes of educating and enlivening Voyager's practice of moving through the macro dimensions. That's the whole purpose.
So,
did I say that correctly?
Yeah. No, you said it.
Oh, okay. Fix it.
And so basically, we're gonna do the next book, the practitioners. Did you show the book, Ivan?
Well, let's show the one that the people are getting.
Can
people see
box.
This one?
All right. Well,
you have to walk that over to the camera.
This is a hardcover limited edition that was done facsimile of the 19, done I believe in 2004.
So they're signed and numbered.
Yes.
So the copyright dates on this are 75, 2004, which is the one that Ivan is holding, and then 2009, which is the enhanced paperback version that I have, which I don't know if you can see them all at the same time.
Well, it'll get there in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, they saw that one last week. Yeah, and we showed that. And
you guys can take it down now.
Yeah,
and you can turn the page.
He can see the fabulous inset.
It is about a minute.
Yeah, on Sunday it was 2.5. So, there you go.
Are those the same books in two different bindings?
Yes
George.
Mm-hmm. And Ivan, we can order that off Gateways.
It's a limited edition. Ivan will check that and see if it's online.
Okay, but
that was
you
my
check.
Question, too.
Okay, thank you, Ivan. You can sit down. It'll show up in another 20 minutes or so. But will you get back to us then on that, please?
Yeah, we have something like 20 or 30 left of this edition, maybe even more than that. But so there, this one is $100.
With the print?
Yeah.
Is it a signed pencil sign?
Yeah, it's pencil signed and numbered. This one is number 98 of 350.
Okay.
So it was an edition of 350.
Thank you.
And how many are left?
You know, I would have to literally
He's guessing 25.
I'm guessing 30,
yeah. Ivan, do we need to call you on the phone to place an order? Do we need to go on Gateways and place an order? How can we go ahead?
No,
can we,
I can't even. I have to go and look. I'm not sure that we have this on the Gateways website. We should. So... Yeah, the easiest thing you can do is call me up for it, and I can talk to Claude about putting it up there if it's not.
Okay. I might send you an email and ask you to give me a call at your convenience.
The answer to the question is always yes, you can call Ivan and order it through Ivan directly if you don't have access to it on the Internet.
Yeah, I don't see it.
It would be limited editions. It would be limited editions, not the paper. Yeah, I think
bottom line is let's not speculate. Let's find out, do a little bit of research, and we'll put it all together. So that'll be starting in a month or two when we start that. Some people have already started to order the books, and they should continue to do so. Okay?
Yeah, we have the paperback. Yeah.
Well.
And I don't even know how we're going to approach this book.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, we don't need to know before we've approached
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
So this is, we've made it to week 53, is what I'm told, and we're on chamber 42nd.
Yes. Before we walk into chamber 42nd, could I just reemphasize what you were saying about what's the jewels that are in the back of this text, the appendix A, B, and C? What David was just referencing, the deck, as he calls it, is listed in the appendix C as the rebirth stations. And for some of those of you that were with me on Sunday night, I read from the Book of Archetypes, which is another formulation of the rebirth stations. And Appendix B names the labyrinth games, again, material that was in some of the earlier texts, for instance, Shakti, Spiritual Science of DNA, references a number of those games. And then Appendix A, if nothing else, you could begin to cue yourself with certain information simply about the color. Because as we
right.
have covered a couple of times, EJ
sure.
offers the teaching in the you can paint formulation and the, what you call it on a map, it has that little thing at the bottom, it says how many inches there are. Isn't that
the legend.
That's called a legend. Well, the legend of the American Book of the Dead is, in my opinion, Appendix A.
Good.
Because it names the six dimensions, the name of the dimension, the color of the dimension, the element of the dimension, and the radiation. So if you do nothing else, just orient yourself that way, and you have so much more going for you when you do what David was describing as sense and alertness about a bardo space.
So I want to give an example of a bardo space that was an exact description of a bardo space that I did not have a sense of until years later. It was in 1972. I had dropped out of college, I think, for the second time. But I was still in a relationship with my girlfriend at the time, Frances Siegel, who went on to become an actual doctor. And she was, her mentor in at Davis Medical School was Sarah's pediatrician.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. So anyway, she and I were in town, and I was a book hound, and I've told this story a number of times, but it's poignant at the moment. And so I go into Heritage Bookshop, and at the time, it has since changed, but at the time, it was a small bookshop. It was a narrow bookshop with high-end antiquarian books. Louis Weinstein, who I got to know years later, was the proprietor, and I said to him, do you have anything on Spinoza? I think I've shared this story before. He says, yes, I do. It's at the back of the shop. So I walked down this very narrow shop, and I'm looking at it, and in fact, there was this wonderful text called The Opera, or Complete Works of Spinoza. And I'm looking at it. It was beautiful. I could afford it. But I decided not to buy it because, alas, it was in Latin. And I needed a working copy. And as I looked up from my perusal of this volume, I noticed in the plate glass window, the large plate glass window at the front, way up at the front, this figure bouncing through, comes walking all the way back to me. There were three people in the shop, Fern, myself, Weinstein. And he looks at me and he goes, the book you're looking for is The Mystical Kabbalah by Dion Fortune. You'll find it at Gilbert's bookstore. And I was blown away. I mean, I was just blown off. You know, and I walk out of the store. I knew where Gilbert's was. So I walk out, and then he leaves, this character. Mm-hmm. He leaves, and I said goodbye to Lou. And I'm walking down the street, and I turned to Fern, and I said, wasn't that incredible? And she says, what? And I was wondering if, Pat, if you would read the...
Did she miss it completely, David?
Appendix C, the second Bardo station.
Yes. Rare book shop. Leather-covered books everywhere. Shop is deep and narrow. Shelves on either side as one enters. Aisle goes back to rear of store. Elderly woman is shopkeeper.
So I didn't plan that. And years later, I didn't know who this person was. I was too shy to ask who it was, his name. And years later, I recognized, I'd come to, I think, one of the workshops, and the way I recognized EJ was through his gait.
Oh, the bounce.
He has a particular gait when he moves.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, that's the same as this guy that approached me in this shop 20 years ago. And I approached him and I said, you know, I had an experience, it was either in 71 or 72, and he goes, 72. So, the reason I'm bringing this up is, other than I was totally unaware of where I was
mm-hmm.
when this was occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told the story many, many times in various classes, but the reason I'm bringing it up is, that was a indicator that you're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy.
Exactly.
You are in a different space. And I've often wondered, and I've said, well, why didn't EJ, in a sense, take me then?
Mm-hmm.
And he had the magic shop up there on off of Hollywood Boulevard on starts with a P. And you know, he had the group going down where, you know, Lynn and those guys were coming to it on
Cosmos
Street there, and I think there were the Red House was up and running by then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it hadn't quite started.
Yeah.
Not yet.
72 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I realized later that the reason is because I had to go back to school and get my expertise as a business tax, you know, professional. Because
yeah.
That's a skill that we use all the time,
that's
and
right.
We have used for the last 30 years.
You had to have something to bring to the door to offer.
It was pragmatic that could be used in the mix of it takes a village. Okay? It takes a village. So, if you begin to read these spaces, these Bardo spaces, then you can begin to notice them around you, notice elements that occur, sounds that occur, colors that occur that are may or may not be signs, but how do you know when it's a sign? Because you develop the sensing mechanism.
Right.
All right?
And one other piece to that. small story. BJ's father, H.L. Bold, was an extremely hospitable man, offered hospitality to people when they came to his home. The first time that I was offered hospitality in his home, he looked at my husband, Robert McKenty, and said, I helped your father's sister. How is she doing? So some of these bardo spaces overlap through time and through individuals.
Right.
And if you don't prevent it, you actually get to pull on some of these strands that have connectivity for you and very gently allow them to touch you so that you are linked in that way also. That was something that I learned at that moment, and because I recognized that one, there were other ones from my past that I was able to pick up on, different strands.
So what was it? What was the important qualifier that Pat started her statements with? Did you get it? If you don't prevent it, mm-hmm. So this form of voyaging requires a particular form of surrender.
That's it.
And you're highly alert. You're highly alert, but at the same time, you're in surrender. And if you have a question about that, you can also read Chapter 2 of Practical Work on Self, the pond exercise, and see what we mean by being open, being penetrated in a certain way by those spaces. Because as you get your skill set up, you are a voyager, and you don't know if there's a door you're supposed to open or someone you're supposed to say hello to at a particular moment. But until you have your skill set and the sensing mechanism, you won't know what to do.
But it is retroactive. It's retroactive and retro forward.
And I think that's a perfect to get us into the 40 seconds. And so we're now on the 42nd chamber, which is deceptively short. I am afraid that if I leave my safe space, I am afraid that if I leave my, so there's a state of being that this voyager is in, I'm afraid that if I leave, that's the viewpoint that this person has. If I leave a safe space, then I'll be tortured, I'll be ripped apart by sadistic, degraded beings, or that the giant chicken will get me and peck my eyes out, or that they'll draw and quarter me for being I am.
Bless you.
Wait a minute. They'll draw and quarter me for being who I am? What the heck does that mean? No problem, because all I have to do is keep in my safe space, right?
Bless you.
Thank you.
So for me, this chamber presented an enormous conundrum. It just, how do I know who I am, for to be who I am? How can I begin to discern to be who I am?
Well, in the simplistic method that I prefer above all others, I read backwards. Am I who being? Now, when I first came to the Institute, I was told that the name of the Institute for the Development of the Who Man being was a reference to the three-brained being, who, man, being, meaning being, man, and spirit. Who, man, being. So when I read M, I, who, being, I reference the parts of myself that I am being, as in activating and being present with, and the who as the spirit which I also am, whether I am participating in spirit or not, I am spirit. And when I say, am I who being, I'm questioning what aspect of myself am I leaving out? What am I not being? How am I not being? What aspect am I not including? So the reference goes, I am afraid, and I will be drawn and quartered for. That to me means that it is an internal perception
That's
that
right.
I hold about myself that is causing me to experience this chamber as one of torture, being drawn and quartered, and being ripped apart. That's what I do not own. What I do not own is preventing me from being whole with myself.
And
that's my simplistic take.
And Pat started her little story before about Horace with, if you don't stop it, if you don't prevent it. So what might the character of being who I am, what might be some attributes to it?
This would be the time for suggestions or participation.
Yeah.
From anyone who wished
yeah.
to contribute.
Yeah, 42. How would you begin to discern this under this thing here, this comment here, for being who I am?
Yeah.
Now, we go back to old Richard Rose, and he said, maybe you don't know what the truth is, but what you can do is retreat from untruth. Because you might know it is untrue for you. Now, that's dangerous because, you know, we're plagued with personality and we're plagued with personal desires and things like that. But we can begin to experiment with things. We can begin to come out. And part of what that means is allowing yourself to be with what you think your Bardo sensations lead you toward.
You have to say that in a simpler way.
Okay. okay. Let's see. Say it in a simpler way.
David, I'll offer an idea.
Hi. Go for it.
When we realize all of our own projections aren't really who we are because we tried out all these things and it's not that, and it's not that, and then it's not that, we progressively come to an empty place that's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Because we're just presence. There's just real no content there. The void is
a... When there is no content, is in a certain way where we can begin.
Right.
Yeah, I guess what my answer to Pat's query is, I know that I'm an electrical being. That I have a certainty about that, and my certainty levels go up when I sense thing on an electrical level.
Mm-hmm.
All right? If I somebody can sense something, oh, you know, it's like that's how I proceed. Okay, so when I say being a, you know, a Bardo being, if I'm standing in that place of nothingness that Harry is pointing to, and I have the courage to stay there for a while, I can start to kind of look around and see, what should I do? What is the right, in a certain way, the right electrical direction for me? Does this make any sense? Go ahead.
It's hard to assess when nothing's real or unreal.
Well, yet the Voyager moves at those points. The Voyager may need to move. George, any thoughts on this?
Well, I see both sides of it. The one side is being who I am. That is who I have been conditioned to believe who I am as a result of heredity and environment and conditioning. It's a state of complete unconscious mechanicality. They're going to quarter and draw me for being who I am, and deservedly so, being an unconscious machine. But then I can read it exactly the opposite way, which is they're going to draw and quarter me for being who I am because I'm actually the white light, and I'm projecting what I would think my worst fear would be, even though I know it's only an illusion of my or the shadows of my consciousness. So, you know, I'm following the discussion, and that's what's occurring to me.
Very nice.
So, for me, this paragraph had a lot to do with developing the discernment between how I think I have to act, which is the mechanicality of the historical personality, and how I would act if I was truly on my own. But developing the ways and means to uncover that is part of my quest at the moment.
Right. And I'm not recalling exactly where the instruction or the information is. Perhaps it'll occur. But I recall that one of the hints is that we move by mood,
mm-hmm.
and that a reflection of mood can be observed, even if you don't have the sensing heightened to be able to accurately read the mood. You can still travel by mood because of the reflection of it. So it's two parts. It's just like this being who I am. It's two parts. One part of it is as Harry is describing, without content. So what you move from, because there's no content, there's no motivation, there's no action, there's no participation. So none of that is going to offer you as a resource. And yet, there is some quality, we can name it various things, but it is that which is reflected by mood. So you do have a way of operating, a way of, quote, moving, that is not because of, quote, who you are. It is exactly from not who you are that you are making a move. It's very complicated to speak about.
Well, it isn't. And the language that Pat is using is actually very reminiscent of the deepest way that the the Christian fathers and you know, of antiquity, and the Jewish scholars, the Muslim scholars, you know, they would say, God, you cannot be named.
Exactly.
But God is named.
Yes.
And so there was, you affirm it, you deny it, and then you deny it again,
mm-hmm.
is one of the mantras that they would use, is that you acknowledge the existence, but then you realize, I can't do that, because who am I to acknowledge that?
Right.
And yet you affirm it again. And because we are white light, and we're an extension, and we're here. And then we begin to discern our purpose. And I think that's what I mean by being a Bardo being.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose is unrelated to your historical personality in a certain way. Well, I don't want to quite go there yet. I want to make the distinction more black and white. And you say, well, how would I ever know that? And one way is to look back and what has it been like for you in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Come on, you got a lot of hard data.
Yeah, the historical evidence
of that being begins to give you powerful clues about who you are and how that being unfolds when you be who you are. So look at yourself in that regard.
Yeah, I think one of the ways EJ talks about this is reminders. Reminding factors and reminders. We have certain artifacts that are reminding factors to ourselves, evidence of ourselves to ourselves. I'm thinking of the mala bead, where you have an actual tactile interaction, experience with
right.
something that holds in it not only your own memory of that experience, but it actually links you to that who you truly are, because that's what it is intoned in that bead. I think if we don't get too far off our stated aim and purpose, it makes it easier, which is you're not there for the personal journey. If you're not there for the personal journey, what does that leave?
That's right.
So in a certain way, answering
good.
The not that will help you get to what it is.
And so I refer you once again to Chapter 7 of Practical Work on Self,
yes.
looking for Dr.
Yes.
Livingston.
Yes.
And that's the exercise where you actually notate yourself when you're in the historical personality in different events, different things,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I went to an interview, I knew I was going to go to this interview with a particular, the KVMR board,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted, you know, to think about me being on the board there. I met with the president of the board,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so, wow, what was I going to be like when I got there? Was I going to be
mm-hmm.
solicitous?
Mm-hmm.
And I started things out really well by being about 20 minutes late. And because I had written the time down wrong, and I get a call from my sponsor, and he says, oh, yeah, you're almost here? And I go, oh, no, it's at 1. He goes, no, it's at noon. And I go, oh, my God, I'll be there in 5 minutes. I came in to the, I'd never met this woman, right, president of KVMR for
mm-hmm.
all these years. And,
mm-hmm.
and I says, well, how's that for good first impression? So how are you in these events that you get into that tells you how part of your historical personality, and you can say, oh, I am not that. I'm not that. Or you go to somebody that you consider an authority figure. let's say you have to call the IRS up. How are you there? Can you be yourself, or are you going to be this historical personality? And if you are, observe it. Because if you can observe it, then you can say, oh, I'm not that. Because if you can say the words, I am not that, then you can, then there's, you know that there's something else.
Right, you still have choice.
And that's right. And that's when you begin to know the nothingness where you can stand in true being. Were you going to say something, Dan?
I just remembered something that I was told a long time ago, which is, if you can see it, it isn't you. And Gopal has a comment. One indicator of being might be a sense of wonder. We had this as kids, may have learned to hide it.
Well, we did learn to hide the sense of wonder, but now we have tools that we did not have as kids. That's what I'm saying is, game on, sister, you know, game on, brother, because you got a lot of tools now. It's not just innocent wonder, it's wonder fueled by things that we've learned over 60 years in some of our cases. Bring that forward too. So this is a great, great chamber for me in terms of discerning being who I am. And that's why when I wrote the email, I said at some point, sometimes you have to wrestle with the chicken.
Yeah.
With the giant chicken.
Yeah, with the giant chicken.
However bad it may seem to take that birth, I'll do it rather than face those hordes of demons, those hounds of hell once again, just to sneak into the next chamber for a moment, okay?
Oh, you have my permission.
If I want to fight off the pursuers, I should immediately and without taking refuge in a hiding space, visualize the beloved as a huge and terrible demon with, I like this, large, thick limbs, standing in an attitude of wrath. Then he continues on. I'll then have the opportunity to choose a womb. And that's what we're talking about here, is a strategy in this adventure, a strategy of choosing a womb, of developing a permanency that will allow us to direct where we're headed rather than the arbitrariness of refuge and reactivity. So that's part of what we're trying to do here. And you can develop the strength by this exercise, I am not that.
Maybe gives us pause to read this over and over and over and over and to recognize that, yeah, that's one of the biggest fears. What can be done about it? Because there's the constant requirement of the human species to seek comfort and safety. And so it's not just, quote, a bardo space. It's all space that we have the default reaction, which is, oh, my God, what do I have to protect myself from? You know?
Something.
I'm out here. I'm vulnerable. So whatever those fears are, however you have written them in your own script, this references it so blatantly, you
right.
cannot avoid it. It's like finally there on the table, as David puts it, to wrestle with, which means, first of all, you have to acknowledge that that's what it is, instead of having it be, oh, well, gosh, that's only one quarter. That's like only one-eighth of the page. It's only one paragraph. Oh, God, let me get out of there quick. No. This is one that's here all the time. All of them are, of course, but... You know, it's just like pull these words out and let them ping pong around in your brain and just see what comes out, you know? Take a look at what your own script is there that you've been writing all this time and see what you can do about some of the impressions that are actually sitting right behind your eyes about all of this. Because it's not, it's nowhere else except in you. It's not someplace else. It's you. So here it is, blatant. Peck my eyes out. Jiminy Christmas, that's
yuck.
Disgusting.
So let me ask you, what are you going to...
Not me.
I'm going to ask you.
Oh, dear.
What are you going to do tomorrow? I mean, just literally in a linear way.
I will get up in the morning, hopefully early, and I will do everything that I need to do in the morning, which I won't go into detail. And then I will get in my car and I will drive to Cheek and I spend 4 or 5 or 6 hours with my mother. Then I will get in the car and drive back. On the way there and back, I will surely stop at some place and get caffeine, as I have today, several times.
So you're going to go?
And during that time, I will have the radio playing.
But the,
so one,
so one event that you're going to go into is the event called Being with Your Mother.
Correct.
And in that, I remember certain events of me being with my mother and how my historical personality came to bear.
You betcha.
And so you have an opportunity tomorrow to be in the place called I Am Not That.
Exactly.
Ivan, what are you going to do tomorrow? You have a doctor's appointment.
Something very similar.
Yes, coming with me,
Chica. No, I said similar, not the same.
Oh, yeah,
Ivan's going to do something very similar.
Get
perfect
up in the
answer.
You're going to get up.
Do the things I need to do.
But aren't you going to go to the doctor tomorrow?
In the afternoon, yeah.
So
I'm going to be going to a doctor's appointment.
So you're going to walk in the door at the doctor's appointment and possibly put on a certain personality as you walk in there. I am not that. What, Dan, what are you going to do tomorrow?
Put the phone up.
Nothing similar. I will get up in the morning. And I will have to remember that I'm not that, whatever I'm doing or where I'm going.
He's not willing to open up enough.
Oh, you want details? I will take my car in the morning to get smog checked. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow morning.
Good. So there's an event. You're going to go there. I mean, I don't think you hang around with the smog check guys every day.
No.
Possibly you do, but... So you can very possibly put on a personality when you walk into that shop. That's all I'm saying is that each of these offers us an opportunity to say, to work with, I am not that.
Every day, all day long.
Okay.
That strengthens our ability to develop discernment of the electrical tonality of our particular being. Each of us is different. There's no question about it. We're, of course, the same in an eternal manner, but each of us has a different character that we bring in that electrical essential body. What do you got over there?
Gopal has another comment. I always get an image of Hanuman from this chamber. Talk about wonder. And that brings to mind the fabulous Indian tales, Ramayana, etc., as associated with this teaching. And he says, timelessness.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good reminder that if the formulation isn't clear enough for us to get the message in this paragraph, there are certain legions of teachings in story and other form that address this very same thing. And Grant has just mentioned one of them, the stories of Hanuman.
You know, and sometimes the potency of the bardo event reaches in and grabs you. Okay.
What do you mean? Is that sort of like a giant chicken?
Yeah, like a giant chicken. But I'm thinking of some of the stories that are in the Ramayana that Grant is referring us to, and sometimes things are just really weird, and sometimes you pop into the space and you go, this is mythic.
Mythic.
Yeah.
I like that. It's mythic. When the cameras and the lights and the microphones go off, I'll tell you the mythic one that I know about.
Okay.
I do want to suggest for people, if you could, for yourself, read the Appendix C or the Appendix B this week, because the next six chambers really describe some things in precise detail. And if you have the background of just even reading through the list of the Labyrinth Games and the Rebirth Stations, you'll have a whole lot more at your fingertips to read these specific 43rd through the 49th chamber. It'll make a big difference for you. And we don't have another way to kind of address it on its own. It has to be in the context of this of these chambers. And we're starting it now because you had to build up a vocabulary, a language, the grammar of the bardos. There's a certain amount that you have to have under your wings so that you can use these other references. So that would be my wish, is that people have some of that available to them. Very helpful. Questions, comments?
Gwaki says, and Hanuman, vis-a-vis the giant chicken, had the ability to change his shape and form and size at will.
Yeah.
That means he gets all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some very rich stories that I'm reminded of in that are worth reading as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a chance to do it with somebody, I recommend the exercise of reading that Appendix C to each other. You read one, and then you say, well, what are your impressions when you hear this?
Yeah.
Somebody else reads it to you, and you go, what are your impressions? And you do that for several of them and see what it evokes. It'll click something in, or it might click something
in. That's very nice. Yeah, we haven't been reading to each other very much lately.
No.
This would be a very good way to re-enter that partnership of reading and receiving being read to.
So consider that, and then either contact somebody online or email or whatever. It is an interesting exercise to do that particular type of thing. Okay, I think we're there. Is that it? Okay.
Good night, all.
Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing
Thank
you.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, Dave and Pat, Ivan.
Bye.
Good night.